1062 New York, an Odyssey sports station. Always live on the free Odyssey app. The biggest names in the business are on You Better You Bet with Nick Kostos.
Hey, this is Joe Buck, and you have done it. You have found it. You are listening to You Better You Bet. Great decision.
This is Bob Costas, not Kostos, but you are listening to Nick Kostos on You Better You Bet.
Hi, this is Kevin Harlan of CBS, Westwood One, and TNT, and I'm listening, as you do every day, to You Better You Bet with the most handsome single man in the radio business, a man who, if I was not married for 38 years, I might consider myself the kind of guy that can electrify a listener. An audience and a crowd of bystanders watching him do what he does so well each and every day. Continue to listen right here on You Better You Bet.
This is You Better You Bet on Westwood One Sports, brought to you by BetMGM.
The magnificent Sports Monday edition of You Better You Bet rolls on. Nick Kostos, our crew, which now includes the great Laura Jimenez. Did I pronounce that correctly? I think I did. And you here on Westwood One Sports. First hour was amazing. Back in the saddle after 2 weeks off. All World Cup. England-Argentina. Dripping with history. And I think England get revenge for 86, the hand of God. 98, Simeone Beckham in the red card. I love England to beat Argentina in the World Cup semifinal on Wednesday. And tomorrow, France and Spain. Semifinal. Might as well be Rams-Seahawks in the NFC Championship game this year. Might as well be Arizona-Michigan Final Four Saturday night this year. Might as well be the Oklahoma City Thunder and the San Antonio Spurs in this year's Western Conference Final. Oh, wait. Remember when the Knicks won the championship? I do. That was really awesome, and I thought a lot about it on my vacation. You absolutely love it. But I do think France-Spain tomorrow, the semifinal, that's the World Cup final. Winner of that game wins the World Cup, and I believe it will be the French. Allez les Bleus. Go France tomorrow against Spain. And I told you why. I think all the people that are saying Team USA is a failure for their performance in the World Cup, they're wrong, and wrong in a big way. Friend of the show, Anthony DeBundo from The Ringer, will join us later this hour to talk all things World Cup. And I will get into all things NBA a little later in the program as well. But joining us right now to talk NBA. Did anything happen while I was gone? Only everything. Joining us now to discuss, friend of the show, the great Matt Moore, Action Network, Locked On NBA, Buckets Podcast, on Twitter at HP Basketball, and there is the link where you can find his awesome Substack writing about all things NBA. Matt, welcome back to the show. How's it going, my man?
It's going well, man. How are you? How was your vacation?
I've used this quote a couple times. You ever seen the movie Office Space?
Mm-hmm.
I did nothing, and it was everything I ever thought it could be. It was hung out with my family. It was spectacular. Thank you very much for asking. Let's talk some NBA. I want to get to Summer League a little later because I think that's been fascinating because all the top rookies have been. How about Caleb Wilson with 35 the other night? But we got to start with Jaylen Brown. And I know it happened 12 days ago, but this is my first show back, and I want to get into a conversation with you about this and your thoughts on the Jaylen Brown trade, and we will hit it from a bunch of different angles. But when you saw that 12 days ago on July 1st, your reaction was what and why?
Sorry, you broke up there. About what's the topic?
Jaylen Brown gets traded 12 days ago to the Philadelphia 76ers.
The biggest story of the summer. Gotcha.
Your reaction was what and why?
My reaction was, that's it for him? Everyone had the same reaction, which is like no one was surprised Jaylen Brown got traded. Like I've talked about this for a couple months on Buckets and on Locked On NBA about how like the rumors were loud enough that I heard that my understanding is that I think Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown came to a point where it was clear that they were okay with not playing together anymore. I don't think it was like this big personal blow up. I don't think they have like beef. I just think that they were ready to not work together anymore. And I think Jaylen Brown made it pretty clear, comments on streams, etc., that he feels like he is being disrespected as just being considered as like a Robin or a number two or a B guy. He doesn't think that anymore. So I wasn't surprised that the Celtics moved on from him. You know, the aftermath is talked about, well, it's the finance as well as the CBA. And I'm like, I think those things played a part. I think those things, I think if it wasn't for the CBA and the second aprons, that the Celtics are likely looking at this and being like, look, we got to try and make this work for a little bit longer. He's too good. That just pushed them on, out the door. Moving for Paul George and those picks, though, is like, I mean, that's, I think it's scary for every other team that has a second star that they paid who isn't the top five player. Because now you're like, man, we can't, if he, they can't move Jaylen Brown for more than this, what can we move? If you're the Nuggets with Jamal Murray, if you're any number of other teams that have like these B guys, if you're the Magic with Franz Wagner or Paolo Banchero, like if you have to move one of those guys, what does that look like? It's pretty scary, honestly, to take a look at what the Celtics got for Jaylen Brown and realize that that's the market for guys that are paid like number ones who are not. And that's really the reality where we're at.
I want to go off the path here for a second, because the team that I thought of, Matt, when you said that, and you're 100% right, is the Oklahoma City Thunder. Mm-hmm. And SGA is obviously the star of that team, but J-Dub's making a ton of money. Chet's making a ton of money. And I don't think anyone would say Chet and J-Dub are great players. Neither guy's a top five option, probably not a top 10 option. Is OKC going to be in some financial difficulty moving forward here? And then we can get back on track with Jaylen.
Yeah, so I think they've planned for this pretty meticulously. Presti was on the competition committee that helped like have outlined a lot of the things that come into the CBA. So like he understands it pretty well. But I also think that I don't think they'll keep J-Dub. I've always kind of thought J-Dub was going to be the one that went. Now, his career is kind of like shaken a little bit because of the injury. He's going to have like a really breakout year. But I think it's more likely that he has a year where it's like, all right, he's so good that he's going to want his own team and they don't want to pay it. I think they keep Chet because it's Shea for the offense, Chet for the defense. I think that's a solid foundation. If Jaylen were a specialist on defense, it makes a lot more sense, but he's not. He's a little bit redundant next to Tatum. And so that differential there, I think, really matters with him. But I don't expect Jaylen Williams to be on the Thunder after 4 years.
The part about the Jaylen Brown trade, and there are many parts of it that are utterly mystifying to me. But the thing that I think has mystified me to the greatest extent and has actually caused me some anger on my vacation, which is bad. You want to be able to chill and like calm it down on the vacation, right? But I think the thing that has caused me the agita and angst on my vacation was this idea that Jaylen Brown is actually bad. That Jaylen Brown is actually not a good basketball player. And that right. Analytics say that Jaylen Brown, and look, some of this, you could take it with a grain of salt to some degree, right? That he's like the 70th best player in the NBA. I don't think anyone actually thinks that. But this idea that Jaylen Brown's actually bad at basketball, and Matt, like, you're someone who thinks about things both through an analytical lens, but also you watch a ton of games. I watch a ton of games. Like, you can't this guy's not great at basketball and not a top player in the NBA. Where do you come down on all of this? I think it's nonsense with analytics and Jaylen Brown in the wake of this trade.
So the part that you didn't mention there is a contract. That's the problem. It's not about Jaylen Brown. No, you know, seventh
well,
best
can we,
player.
Can we separate the contract from it? Because you're right. But can we separate the contract and just talk about on court? Forget about the contract. This idea that Jaylen Brown's not that good because the analytics say he's not that good.
So there's a difference there, though. You said not good and not that good. And that differential is really important there. Is that, and like, that's why you can't get past the contract, because it's like, you can be not that good and still be like a major part of a winning team. You can be not an elite top 10 player and still be a huge part of a winning franchise. Like, you can win titles. Like, no one thinks Jalen Brunson's a top five player. No one. No one thinks Jalen Brunson's a top five player in the league. If you do, you're Knicks. If you're a Knicks fan, that's fine. You're on top of the world. You're on top of the world. You get to do that. You get to do that for another couple months at least. But
you get months.
Month. That's it. I'm only giving you the start of the season for that. You get to celebrate the championship forever. But like, it's about being that good is the question here. And the conversation then starts skewing, because then it's like, well, look, the analytics have some things right. So here's like a data point. And then it's like, oh, so you don't think he's good at all. And it's like, well, no, that's not really what it said. Jaylen Brown, I would agree, is a little bit underrated at this point, just from there's things that he does that some of the metrics won't capture correctly. If you're good enough to be finals MVP, and he was the most, I thought he was, he had the best season of anybody in 24. It wasn't just the conference finals and finals. Like, he fit into that team, but that was also in part because Jason Tatum sacrificed a lot on that 24 team to make that work so they could win a title. Brown's great. He's awesome. He's really awesome. There are just things about his game that don't translate as a number one option. Like, that's kind of the question here. Let's remove the contract because you want to. I think it's hard to in this context, but let's do it. Let's say that the Celtics were like, all right, Jason, we love you, but you're coming off an Achilles, and we actually just think Jalen's the better player. We need you to slide into a number two role. Brown would be less effective than Tatum as the number one role because he's more turnover prone. He makes worse decisions, and his shots are worth less. Like, he just doesn't take as many threes. He's less efficient. Again, these things matter because you need to be able to create buckets sometimes, and Brown's really good at that, and he's gotten better as a defender. 56
games, and I agree with you. I think Tatum's better. If you made me choose one, I would take Tatum. But, like, Brown can – he just did it. No?
They did not just, you didn't watch the Celtics and go, like, man, thank God for Jaylen Brown. There's no way they win that game without him. You're just like, God, the Celtics are awesome, and Jaylen's having an amazing year. Like, they went into that season last year. I talked to John Corrales that does Locked On Celtics, and he was like, they're going to have one of the worst defenses in the NBA. They have no centers. They were a top five defense. They just, like, made Nemus Keita into an elite rim protector. Everyone stepped up. The Celtics' organizational strength, basketball-wise, is so good. I'm not saying Jaylen Brown's a system player. I'm saying that when people use the line, they won 56 games. It's like, yeah, he gets credit for being part of that, but you did not watch the Celtics and were like, oh man, they are only good because of Jaylen Brown. He dragged them there. That's not how it felt watching them.
Who will have more wins? You know what? I'll phrase the question this way, as opposed to regular season wins. When it's all said and done, which team will have the better season in totality, including playoffs, and why? The Boston Celtics or the Philadelphia 76ers?
I'll say Celtics. Their floor is so high. You know,
we'll go mano a mano on this one. I'll take the Sixers.
Go for it.
You're right. The floor is higher for Boston than it is for Philly, but I think the ceiling's higher for the Sixers than it is for the Celtics.
Look, if you tell me Embiid's gonna play 60 games, then sure. Like that changes.
I'm not gonna tell you that.
But, you're not gonna tell me that.
I mean I could, but I'm not going to. And
the problem is really just like look at it this way. They were a play-in team, right? The Sixers were a play-in team. How many wins is Jaylen Brown worth? And you could be like, you can reject the idea that he's worth zero, but that doesn't mean that you think he's worth 10.
Well, he's going to play 78 games, right? Whereas Paul George gets suspended for a quarter of the season or the third of the season.
Sure, but that's like Paul's first major suspension, I would also note.
That's true, but like it did happen.
And again, like he's way better than Paul George. I'm not trying to argue that. I do kind of look at it and go, the results of it, in totality last year, indicated that without Jason Tatum, the Celtics were still the two seed. And that with Embiid playing for a chunk of the year, the Sixers were still a play-in team. And adding Jaylen Brown, I can't get to a point where they jump 15 wins because of adding Jaylen Brown. Maybe it all comes together for them, though. I wouldn't be surprised.
Who do you like in the playoffs more, assuming health? Which is a big assumption, and I understand that.
No, Philly. It's Philly for sure. That's the problem is like Brown's ability actually really does parlay to the playoffs better than it does a regular season. Cause you need guys that can make a tough bucket. You need guys that can hit pull up shots off the dribble that are just that you don't have to run plays for, that you don't have to run sets for, that can get schemed and scouted. Jaylen Brown can just go out there and make buckets. Like he could just make stuff happen. And with Tyrese Maxey, who I thought was worthy of first team all NBA consideration. I thought about him for that fifth spot on all NBA first team. That throw in Embiid. I worry about Maxey getting lost in the sauce here a little bit with Brown and Embiid, but in general, yeah, the team is stacked. VJ Edgecombe year better. Like they are awesome. I love the Sixers team. If they trade Joel Embiid tomorrow, just because of the injury stuff, not because of Embiid. If they trade Joel Embiid tomorrow, I would be all in on the Sixers. Then I would be all in on the Sixers being better than the Celtics.
Yeah, it just feels like that. Who's taking that contract? Feels like the Sixers will probably stuck with them for quite some time. You bet on. What do you got for us?
Oh, just there. I can't confirm which teams. I will say that I know that there are two teams that have had conversations at least about the idea of it. And you shouldn't be surprised. The Sixers have called everyone calls everyone about everyone, and they just try and protect what they've had the conversations for. But I do think that there have been conversations about Joel Embiid.
Let's say that the Sixers traded Joel Embiid this week. How many picks are they attaching to that trade to make a team want to take him? And like, just for people in the audience that don't know, like, they're like, why would that be the case? Because Embiid's injury history and because of how much money he makes and how long his contract is for. They're going to have to attach something to the trade to make someone, even if we all think Embiid's great and he won MVP a couple years ago, you agree with that, right? Like, if they trade him, they're going to have to trade what assets do they have to even move him? Am I wrong about that?
You're not wrong. I do think that with cases like Embiid, so here's another situation with Brown. There wasn't a team that was desperate for Jaylen Brown. There wasn't a franchise where it was like, this is what's missing. This is what we need. Or the ship is going down. We need a lifeboat and Jaylen Brown's what's going to save us. And it's not about how good Jaylen Brown is. It's just about like Jaylen Brown's type of player. There are definitely franchises that will look at it and be like, look, I know he's hurt. But if there are definitely those franchises, I think there are definitely franchises that have assets that are depreciating, that aren't getting better, that are low value, that if they're like, if you'll take this, sure, we'll swap one problem for another is a pretty common thing in the NBA.
Can you give me an example of what you're talking about?
Create
a hypothetical. I'm not holding your feet to the fire. Just like a hypothetical.
Yeah, this is entirely speculative. Embiid to the Sacramento Kings for Zach LaVine, along with like other pieces.
That'd be horrible.
Yeah, it'd be horrible for everyone. Yeah, my point is more about the assets. There are a couple of teams I think in the contender tier. Here's another one that I can like speculatively add: Dallas.
That makes all the sense in the world. Yeah. If Dallas wanted to do that, that would make a ton of sense, right?
Right. Where, you know, Flag is good enough. You're still building around him. You've added a bunch of these pieces and you're able to get Embiid. If you're only sending some veteran role players, if it's Daniel Gafford along with Najee Marshall or PJ Washington, those level of contracts in exchange for Embiid, and you've got Flag and Embiid and Kyrie, and you're like, yeah, we want to take things slow with Flag, but this is a chance for us to like really kind of push it. And when Embiid's out, Flag's going to be the one that's still the engine of the team. That makes a lot of sense.
I know it's summer league. I know. Merez Johnson, pretty, pretty good so far for the Dallas Mavericks. Mm-hmm. Pretty, pretty good. You bet on this Monday. Nick Costos and you, Westwood One Sports, joined by our friend Matt Moore from the Action Network on Twitter at HP Basketball. Matt, where's LeBron James going to sign and when's it going to happen?
Cavs, I'll say the next 10 days. I don't know when he's going to get done with vacation. I got to applaud LeBron for just being...
He's the best. He really is.
Everyone else is annoyed and I'm like, I love it because he's just like...
I do too.
He's like, why would I be on your timeline? I'm 42. I don't have. I'm not going to rush.
Also, so this is the most dead week of the year in sports. Please drag this out. Drag this out, LeBron. Yeah. Please.
There's been a lot of indications it's Cleveland. I actually kind of think it's always been Cleveland. I think all of this stuff has been telegraphed weird. Now, I don't know about the Sixers stuff because I personally can't get to a spot where I'm like, really? He thinks that's the spot? There's no. When you listen to the comments from Rich Paul, it's not about where he can win a championship, and it's not even necessarily about the best basketball fit. You can tell that it's about what feels right, what's like the narrative fit for him. And that's where Golden State makes sense, because it's like you team up with your rivals for one last run with the great players of this generation. I hate that idea, because you should not end your career with your biggest rivals on their team, but Cleveland makes the most sense. Like I've asked everybody, when he does that final chalk toss, the last regular season game, when he does the final chalk toss of his career before a game, because he'll bring it back. Where do you see that happening? Do you see it happening in San Francisco at that arena? Or do you see it in Cleveland with the billboard outside that says, instead of we are all witnesses, it's a big one that says we were all witnesses.
Or witnessed.
Like, yeah.
I don't know what's better.
That's even better.
Is that better? Yeah, it's not bad.
I think it's better. Witnessed. Like, you know, he does the chalk toss or the iconic image, and you put him side by side with him as a rookie and then him as the 42-year-old man doing it for the last time. It's perfect. It's perfect. I get chills thinking about it. Miami is more of like, yeah, no, I like the weather too much in LA. I can't go back because like, I just think the Heat are too far away. They're not good. They're honestly not good enough right now for LeBron. The Cavs, look, I don't think the Cavs are going to win the title because I think James Harden is it's too much of an impediment with the contract they're going to give him. But I do think that Cleveland has always made the most sense. I like the idea of him going to Minnesota because that is him paying it forward and being like, I'm going to be here and pay it forward to Anthony Edwards and show him how to win at the highest level. He's made the conference finals, but I'm going to help him because I want, nobody did that for me and I want to do that for him.
Honestly, I would love that. I'd like that more for LaMelo Ball than I would for him. And I'll talk about that trade a little later in the show. But let's just, because we're running out of time here, 2 minutes to go, two questions on LeBron and Cleveland. You kind of answered the first one already, but I want to ask the question. Because I said on this show, I think the Knicks would have still won the series. And I think that's kind of been proven out since they won the championship. Let's say you had replaced James Harden with LeBron James for that series. I think the Knicks still win, but there's no way the Knicks sweep. Like, the Cavs would have won game one. I was there at Madison Square Garden, right? Who knows how it goes? Let's say the Cavs sign LeBron James. What happens with James Harden? Because he has to come off the bench, right? Harden does. 30 seconds on this.
No, it's going to be Mitchell and Garland. It's going to be Mitchell and Harden, and then LeBron and Evan Mobley and Jared Allen is what.
Who handles the ball?
Donovan Mitchell and James Harden.
What does LeBron do?
LeBron, the same thing he did last year. Last year was Luka Doncic and Austin Reeves. This is Donovan Mitchell and James Harden. And I mean, a lot of it's like bringing the ball up and handling all the time. It does wear you down. So LeBron will handle a lot in the second unit. Maybe he takes away some of the possessions so Harden doesn't gas himself out doing Harden ball all the time. That's like an optimistic view of it. But yeah, I mean, that's the plan. There's no like coming off the bench. That's going to be the starting five. I think it's one of the reasons they let Dean Wade go. It was like for them to transition into this kind of a setup with LeBron. So, yeah, I think he absolutely starts, and it's just he's the third player on that team.
And I forgot to mention Dean Wade is part of the resurgent, the new look Philadelphia 76ers, obviously. Final question. Let's say the Cavs sign LeBron. Yeah. What month do they fire Kenny Atkinson?
Good question. I think they'll wait. I think
what's the percent chance that Kenny Atkinson's the coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers game one of the playoffs if they sign LeBron?
Ooh, I would say 70%. There's a 30% chance he gets fired in season.
Oh, man. Yeah. Way higher than that, in my estimation.
I know. You hate that guy now.
I don't hate him. I mean, he was horrible against my Knicks. I love him.
Yeah.
He should have been on the float next to Jalen Brunson and Mike Brown at the parade. He was great. Just like he can't say the stuff that he says. It's just a little ridiculous. And I think LeBron's going to be like, get this dude the hell out of here. My final season in Cleveland. What's David Blatt doing? Matt, great job. There's so much for us to talk about it. And we spent 22 minutes talking about a lot of fun stuff. So I will bid you adieu for now. And we'll catch up soon at HP Basketball on Twitter, Action Network, Locked On NBA, Buckets Podcast. Thank you very much. And if you're so inclined, I will be saying something about the National Football League later that I know you will enjoy, my friend. Thank you for the visit.
I'll be listening, man. Take care.
Our friend Matt Moore joining us here on You Better You Bet. We will take a quick break. And on the other side, he's everywhere. Some people talk Kylian Mbappe, Erling Haaland, Leo Messi, Jude Bellingham as the star of this World Cup. They're wrong. It's our friend Anthony DeBundo from The Ringer. You'll join me next on Westwood One Sports.
The Home Run Derby is tonight on Netflix. Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber will have home park advantage. Will one of them take the crown in the city of brotherly love? Westwood One Sports.
David is a real Prevagen user, and this is his story.
Nice to meet you. My name is David. I've been a pharmacist for 44 years, and I'm from Flowery Branch, Georgia. When I first started taking Prevagen, I noticed stuff just seemed to come together and fit like a jigsaw puzzle. When I have customers come in, I recommend Prevagen. Number one, because it's safe and effective, does not require a prescription. And I've been taking it quite a while myself, and I know it works. I wouldn't recommend something like Prevagen if I didn't think it was worth it because it works so good for me. And I love it when the customers come back in and tell me, David, that really works so good. Makes my day.
Prevagen, at stores everywhere without a prescription. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Testimonialist was compensated for their time.
Indeed presents hires you can't afford to get wrong, like public works supervisor. Hey, this water main is under a ton of pressure. Did you ever fix it?
Yeah, 3 layers of duct tape. Wait, should I have added a 4th layer?
This is a job for sponsoring jobs.
This is what happens when you don't sponsor your job on Indeed. Next time, get matched with quality candidates with Indeed sponsored jobs. Visit Indeed.com/hire now and sponsor your job today.
In 200 feet, turn right. Then apply to refinance your auto loan with Navy Federal Credit Union.
Huh?
Navy Federal offers low rates that can help you save every month on your auto loan.
Wow, I can get all that with Navy Federal?
You sure can, good buddy.
Refinance your auto loan with Navy Federal to get on the road to better rates. Learn more at NavyFederal.org/auto-refinance. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Navy Federal.
800-785-9132.
Now, back to You Better You Bet with Nick Costos, presented by BetMGM on Westwood One Sports.
So who is this? This Lil Kim, right? The Bentley's, the Benz, Escalade's 23-inch rims. Who is this song? Yeah, it is Lil Kim. Yeah, I got that right. Yeah. Anyway, what percent of the audience knows that? I don't know. This segment on You Better You Bet, sponsored by Progressive Commercial Insurance, protecting small businesses with affordable coverage options. Get a quote today at progressivecommercial.com. East Coast, West Coast, worldwide. Joining us right now, we might start calling him Worldwide Anthony DeBundo. My guy's everywhere, including, like, I said to Bill yesterday when we were talking on the phone, I was like, how many times did DeBundo come on the show while I was on vacation? Like, 8. We appreciate your dedication to the cause, my friend. Doing an awesome job with our friends at The Ringer, covering the World Cup and all things sports. What's going on, buddy? Happy semifinal week to you and yours.
Well, you had JJ filling in for you. I got to support my guy. Got to come on, do some soccer. And always during the Mundial. You know, we don't take vacations during the World Cup here on this end of the show. So I had to give you crap for that one.
I did get a text from DeBundo, like the first day of my vacation. Like, how are you taking off during the World Cup? I said, because I would like to survive football season. That's why.
I get it. You have bigger fish to fry than the World Cup. But you know what? You're here for the business end. It's semifinal Tuesday and Wednesday. We've got the 4 best teams, maybe, I think, playing each other. The 4 most compelling teams, certainly, throughout this tournament. And you know what? Cape Verde, Switzerland, Colombia. We had fun with those teams. But now, let's be real. Like, this is what we want to see, right?
Put this Final Four in perspective for everybody and how good it is.
It is very rare that you don't have a gate crasher, right? Almost certainly in the last few World Cups. You go back 4 years ago, we had Morocco and Croatia in the semifinals, and it made for, you know, a little bit of a coronation of France and Argentina as they rolled their way into the final, and everybody kind of knew, okay, it's just going to be France and Argentina. We've seen, you know, 8 years ago when Croatia pulled off the upset against England, that we've seen, you know, semifinals that haven't always lived up to the hype. You go back to Netherlands, Argentina, who played out a terribly boring 0-0 in 2014. So just because you get big teams doesn't always mean you're going to get a great match. But I find it hard to see a world where these are not two really compelling, evenly matched matchups. And like I was doing my numbers on this, I have England at 54% and I have Spain at 51% roughly to win these. Like, everything is on the table in these semifinals.
Let's talk about the betting market for the Spain-France game coming up tomorrow. Now, I it feels like you and I always go head-to-head in these international tournaments when we get down towards the end. So I've been a France guy from the start. You've been to Spain. We won't have to talk about the fact that I had Spain in Euros and you had the Dutch. We don't have to talk about that. But we will go mano-a-mano again here with France versus Spain. And I've been on France the whole tournament, the only team I bet to win it. At BetMGM right now, when you were talking about another domestic sports book off air that we don't have to mention because BetMGM sponsors the show, where France is an even bigger price against Spain. And at BetMGM, France is -150, and I think France is going to win, DeBundo, but that feels really rich to me, where I think this is close to a coin flip. And based on your numbers, you agree here, right? So, like, betting advice, I guess, is to bet Spain in this game, no?
The tail of the tape is fun for a matchup like this because, look, schedules have been relatively even now. I'd argue, actually, with playing Portugal and Belgium, who, you know, aren't exactly teams I was high on personally, but teams that the market rates highly, Spain had to play, you know, a tougher round of 16 opponent. and a tougher quarterfinal opponent once you factor in that Morocco had a few key injuries there. So once you factor in the whole schedule, it comes out pretty much in the wash. France, expected goal difference, plus 10.5. Spain, plus 9.9. Those two numbers are so comparable and basically even over the course of six matches that you really couldn't draw a meaningful conclusion from it. You look at whose defense has been better. You would say Spain. France has been incredible in the knockouts, but had some cracks in the group stage, again, against some of the better attacking teams they played. So you're like, okay, who's created more big chances? I think that's why there's a perception that France has been the better team in this tournament, because they've been the sexier team. They scored and won by more margin. However, I'll make the case that like France winning, whether you beat Paraguay by three or one or Sweden, doesn't really matter once you get down to playing the best teams, because these games are not going to be decided by super wide margins. And Spain has kind of built their tournament around prioritizing the fact that if we literally never concede, we can't lose. And that's been the case. And they have had a couple of games, certainly, where they've looked a little sluggish in attack, relied on some late goals, but they've been in such control of these games, they've never actually been in doubt. So just because the score lines aren't as sexy doesn't make Spain a worse team. Now, the other thing, and this is the reason I think the market sees what has gradually moved toward France, is that Lamine Yamal is not playing right now at the level that Kylian Mbappe and Michael Olise are playing at. So you're naturally going to say, well, who do we think can be a match winner in an even game? You would definitely draft France's players first, and so that's why France is the favorite.
If Spain win tomorrow, I know you think Spain's going to win, and I like France, but I'm not like Spain could easily win this game. If Spain wins, how does it happen?
It happens with the boa constrictor Spanish possession, the old school classic that they've been able to pull off. And look, like these two teams have played the last 2 years. I know like the World Cup hasn't happened in many, many years, but in 2024 at the Euro semifinal, we loved Spain, right, in that game against France. And they rolled them. I mean, it was a 2-1 win, but the second half of the game, Spain playing with a lead had 61% of the ball and basically said, we keep the ball, you can't get it off of us. And then in the Nations League, France did make some changes. They went with a more aggressive lineup, and Spain said, oh, okay, nice, we were going to score five goals. Now, Spain is not operating right now at the level, attack-wise, that they were at those two tournaments. That is certainly true. Yamal and Williams. Williams is barely playing. He's probably going to play like 30 minutes off the bench here. Yamal is playing full 90s, but looks like to me he's at like 85%, and he's not looking like he's explosive. But some of the lacking explosiveness of Lamine is also a function of the fact that they are trying to control matches so much. They are literally going to try to play keep away from France. And Morocco had some moments where they were able to get the ball and keep the ball, and they had a majority of the possession in the game they lost 3-0, which is very rare. Spain can do that, but also keep the ball better and also create some attacking chances out of it and also defend better when they lose the ball. So we know Spain winning this game probably entails them having 55, 56, 57, 60% of the ball and saying, France, you can't attack us if you never have the ball. That's the plan. France's press, just okay.
True or false, and why? The winner of France-Spain wins the World Cup. Like, tomorrow is the final.
I would say it's true, but I would caution people, and this is a comp that I think is kind of funny, because I think there's a lot of comps between this and the NBA playoffs, right? I mean, England is the Knicks, right? They haven't won it in forever. They've got the narrative behind them. They've got the feel-good vibes.
The new
Maybe
manager.
They're not as talented. Yes, all these things. And then OKC, right? They're the deep stack team with the MVP. That's Mbappe in France. Then you've got the newcomers, Spurs, Lamine Yamal. And they're trying to usurp them as the best team in the world, and France is the favorite. But you're like, well, but Spain, they're pretty good. And then they're like, but whoever wins OKC Spurs, like, they got the final. And the betting odds for the final will be pretty close to what the odds were for Spurs Knicks. Whoever wins this game is probably going to be just as big of a favorite. And like, I'm not saying that I think England is going to win the World Cup, but I'm saying that, like, I don't know. People tend to be overconfident in like a contest that's like 63-37 or like 66 to, they're like a 2-1 favorite. Okay, but like those teams lose all the time. We literally just watched it happen.
Is Brunson in this scenario Kane or Bellingham?
I would say he has to be Bellingham.
So who's
Bellingham's
Kane?
Been the moments guy. Yeah, I don't know that it gets a little too deep, because then you start looking around. You're like, okay, well, England has the two stars and the Knicks only really have the one.
Yeah,
and then like a series of collection of others. But yeah, I would. I don't know. He's not Cat. That would be a little disrespectful to Harry Kane, I think.
I think even Ananobi's disrespectful to Harry Kane, right?
Yeah. So it doesn't really. And then, like, we can't really talk about it. We need, like, the Warriors to come into the picture for, like, the Argentina comp to work.
Well, actually, my comp earlier in the show was France is the Warriors. 18 was 15, right? 22 was 16, and now this is 17, and Olise is Kevin Durant in this instance.
Yeah, he comes in and just puts them over the top. Yeah, that's it's a good comp. I mean, Olise after Leo
behind.
Messi. So, Leo Messi.
Okay.
I
think Bellingham's been the best player of the tournament.
No, I can't. Bellingham is a fascinating player. And I wrote about this in my preview, which is up at theringer.com now, or will be up in a matter of moments. He is a very unique player, and it is the perfect player that creates a lot of debate amongst the like deep in the weeds people, and then the people who are watching it from afar, because he has these incredible. He's a moment.
God, is this like Jaylen Brown? I can't goals. Do this. Like, are you? If I have to hear about like VORP or DVOA or like EPA or anything, right? I can't.
He's a number 10, right? He plays in that spot where you traditionally get a lot of creativity for others, and he doesn't do any of that. He's like a pretty good.
That's okay. He just wins the game. It's okay. He just wins the game.
Right.
No problem.
Right. He has them. He's a moments player. That's why you have to have him out there. That's why Tuchel like secretly doesn't like him, because he doesn't really fit into the system. But he's like, I gotta play him. He's too good. He makes plays like he did. And you can tell they don't really like each other either. It's a very fun dichotomy. But he's a unique player. He's not a traditional 10 in any sense. He's closer to like a striker, but also a midfielder. He's always around in the penalty area. And honestly, England's worst 45 minutes of the whole, maybe of the whole tournament, were the second half against Norway when they brought Eze in. Eze played in that role that Bellingham had occupied. Bellingham dropped deeper, and they totally lost control of the match, and they couldn't keep possession, and Norway was taking it to them and created the better of the chances in the second half. So like, it's a weird player that you kind of have to tactically fit for. Yeah, like the moments are insane. He makes these marauding runs into the box. He's more athletic than most of those guys, and he's incredible with the ball at his feet. So you're like, well, you got to have him out there. But you know, the Leo Messi has been the best player.
Anthony DeBundo on the Ringer on the show at Anthony DeBundo has been amazing covering the World Cup for them. But you know what? You know, there's no great Beatles song called "Hey Leo." So I'll take you.
That's
Bellingham.
True.
I'm guessing, dude, every time Bellingham and I bet on England, I'm just like, hey, Jude, it's the best. I'm guessing
Make
you
a
agree.
Sad song.
Dude, I'm singing Wonderwall to myself when England take the lead against Norway. It's so good. I'm guessing you agree. I put this on social media. People get mad because it's social media. I think Argentina. And I don't mean this disrespectfully. I think Argentina's clearly fourth of four here. Not that they're terrible. I just don't think they're as good as the other three. I love England. Like I think France is going to win the tournament, but I'm more confident that England wins in this round than I am that France wins. You're nodding. You like England also. Why do you like England against Argentina? How do you see the game playing out on Wednesday?
Yeah, I mean, look, like strength of schedule is vastly different here. I mean, having to play Norway in Miami in the extreme heat, having to play Mexico at the Azteca. They had the tougher group with Croatia in the first match. They have shown ceilings that Argentina has not come close to in this tournament. Now, I will say that like England has not exactly been consistent. I mean, they struggled with Congo for the first half. They barely survived a situation in Mexico. They, again, in the second half against Norway on Saturday, were pretty mediocre again. And like just ask Thomas Tuchel. He'll tell you. Don't ask me. As Thomas Tuchel, he'll tell you how disappointed he was in the performance at some points of this tournament. But, you know, Argentina hasn't played a team close to this. I mean, Argentina was outplayed for the first hour and 5 minutes before the Embolo red card pretty solidly. Switzerland was tilting the field on them. They controlled the possession. And it's one thing if you're doing that with a lead, you're up 1-0 and you're like, okay, we want to sit here. But they weren't creating anything in transition. They weren't creating anything at all. And then once Switzerland puts the goal in, I'm thinking to myself, wait a second, like they should probably be a toss-up to advance here. Then the red card happens and the game changes and yada yada. But where's the period where I'm supposed to be impressed by Argentina? Because the only good attacking minutes they've played in this knockout were the last 20 minutes against Egypt and like a handful of minutes against Cape Verde late on in that match. And both times it was Leo Messi basically putting the team on his back, turning back the clock and becoming a wide forward because they realized that they have no width on attacking or defending. And so it's like, okay, Messi can, like, in a break glass in case of emergency moment, hop over there, create some chances, combine, create more space for the other players to cook in the middle. But that doesn't work against a team as good as England for 90 minutes. That's like a, we can do this to scrape by against Cape Verde and Egypt and Switzerland when they're down a man, right? So I just don't think it works. And England has the wingers to take advantage of Argentina not having any depth on or width. Like Dan and Doy and all these Swiss guys, were cooking them. Like, I think it's a big Anthony Gordon game. I think it could be a good Saka game if he comes off the bench. There's a lot of advantages the more and more I dig into this matchup for England. And the one advantage for Argentina is they have Leo Messi. And he has the ability, with his set pieces, where England has struggled defensively, with his left foot, to just decide games. And maybe he can do it one more time, but I certainly think it's more likely that England is just the much better team with more match winners and they win this match.
Now, let's just say, final thing here. France beat Spain. Argentina beat England. And we get the France-Argentina final for the second consecutive World Cup. France wins that game like 4-1, right? Like, France destroys Argentina if that's the final. Destroys them.
It's so funny because there is revisionist history on the last final. Because Argentina destroyed France for 75 minutes.
And then Mbappe did what Mbappe does and pulled it out and got it to extra time and got it to penalties eventually. But Argentina did not. Like, I don't. Is it fair to say Argentina dominated that game? Is that fair?
Oh, my God. Yeah, France's first shot didn't come until the second half.
Do you remember when that game was played? It was on an NFL Sunday morning. I was on the air doing You Better You Bet's countdown to kickoff while I'm sweating a massive pre-tournament wager on Argentina to win the World Cup. That was a great day.
I mean, it was one of the greatest sporting events of my life. I'm not sure we'll ever top that in terms of soccer games. Like the finish, the last 45 to an hour of that match was...
The Messi and Mbappe going shot for shot, basically. It was sick.
And so here's the thing. Like, France is the better team. And I felt Argentina was the better team going into that final 4 years ago.
Yep, agreed.
Guess what? Like, again, these matches are not decided by a whole lot. And so, I think France would be the clear favorite. But would you be shocked if, like, Martinez stood on his head?
Yes.
Messi had a moment of magic and it was 2-2 going into extra time?
Yes. If Argentina beat France, I would be that. That is, I'd be pretty surprised if England beat. I guess England's got the ceiling to be able to do it. I don't think it would happen, but I would be shocked if Argentina beat France.
I don't know if England has the gas. Like, that's the thing for me. Like, they look like they're going to run out of gas in any moment. I'm hoping that's not Wednesday, but, like, you know, France and Spain certainly had to exert themselves a lot less and have more depth. If you wanted to be critical of Tuchel, like, he didn't take the deepest squad here. So, like, France and Spain have depth and numbers. I mean, Cherki, Barcola, Spain's bringing Marino and Williams off the bench. They have Zubimendi. Like, the depth of those teams are way deeper than what England and Argentina has right now. And they'd have to exert themselves less. So you just feel like they'll be fresher on Sunday. And that probably adds to the advantages. But again, it's one soccer match.
Yeah, dude, Spain has Marino, maybe in relation to Dan, and he just comes in and scores goals and wins games every single game. It's unbelievable. We got a split here, take a commercial break. You're the best. And Anthony DeBundo, who's been killing it all World Cup long. I'm happy for your success, my man, and we'll catch up soon.
Absolutely.
Our friend Anthony DeBundo joining us here on You Better You Bet. More show on the other side.
We know you're jonesing for some football just like we are. NFL training camps begin opening in 9 days. And yes, we're counting. You're home for the NFL. Westwood One Sports.
Hey, I'm not one to say I told you so, but do you remember last year when I told you that Pure Talk was hands down the best wireless company that I'd ever used? Well, some of you were skeptical, but Consumer Reports just asked 120,000 people to rate every wireless company in America, including the big boys. Well, guess which company was the only company to get 5 stars in every category? Yeah, Pure Talk. Coverage, support, value, data. 5 stars across the board. No service contracts, no cancellation fees, just great U.S. customer service on a crazy fast 5G network for a fraction of what you've been paying. I'm not going to say I told you so, but I will encourage you one more time to dial #250, say micro, and switch to a 5-star American wireless company that won't let you down. Pure Talk.
And the match is about to begin. Most of the team is out with COVID-19, so there'll be some substitutes tonight.
What's this? We have an unexpected guest on the field.
It's a dog, but they could do with extra players.
She's going for the ball.
Are front paws hands or feet?
Soccer season is full of surprises, and COVID-19 could be one of them. If you test positive, prescription medications may help. Ask your doctor if they're right for you. Learn more at PfizerForAll.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
Drip Drop is doctor-developed, proven fast hydration that helps your body and mind work better. Trusted by firefighters, medical professionals, and over 90% of top college and pro sports teams, Drip Drop is engineered to hydrate faster and more effectively than water alone, with 3 times the electrolytes of leading sports drinks. Stock up now at DripDrop.com and use promo code Radio20 for 20% off your first order. That's DripDrop.com, promo code Radio20 for 20% off your first order. Head to DripDrop.com.
800-785-9132.
How about that?
How about that?
Sweet center.
6-7, 7-6, 6-3.
Another forehand crushed. Four sets of compelling tennis to finish up Wimbledon 2026. A final to remember.
Now, back to You Better You Bet with Nick Costos, presented by BetMGM on Westwood One Sports.
Today, BetMGM players will receive an Any Sport Parlay Boost token. To use the Parlay Boost token, add a parlay wager to your bet slip and activate the token. If you win the wager made with the token, you'll receive extra winnings. Everybody loves that. Download the BetMGM app today and please gamble responsibly. Jannik Sinner, the favorite to win Wimbledon. Jannik Sinner wins Wimbledon yesterday, loses the first set to Alexander Zverev, and then wins the next three. And Jannik Sinner, once again, a major champion. His second consecutive Wimbledon title. Now 5 majors in the career for Jannik Sinner. And for Sinner, his first major championship since last year's Wimbledon. And a lot of heartache for Sinner in between major championships. We can go back to the semis at the Australian Open this year, losing to Novak Djokovic, losing in insane fashion to Cerundolo early in the French Open. So obviously it meant a lot to Jannik Sinner winning this major. My problem, though, with Jannik Sinner, and my problem, honestly, and it's not tennis's fault, but with men's tennis as a whole right now, is with Carlos Alcaraz out. And at this point right now, we don't know if Alcaraz is playing at the U.S. Open, where Sinner will be the huge favorite in that tournament as well. Without Alcaraz, it's not really that compelling. Like, at least during the Big Three era, you had 3 guys that could win any given tournament in Djokovic, Federer, and Nadal. Now it feels like, and of course, like, things can happen, like Sinner losing. Also, if Sinner loses early, where's the star power? Tennis needs Alcaraz back. Because, like, for as good as Novak Djokovic, and Djokovic is playing for the love of the game right now. Because, like, he can't beat Sinner. And I know he did earlier this year, but he even said it after Sinner destroyed him at Wimbledon. We need Alcaraz back, and we need him back for the U.S. Open to make this compelling on the men's side. Final hour, Power Hour coming up next. We'll give you our bets for the Home Run Derby. Talk some NBA as well. Jaylen Brown, LeBron James. And who is the best quarterback in the NFL? I will tell you next.
This is Westwood One Sports.
Need to sell your house fast? Whether you're facing foreclosure, stuck with bad tenants, or just ready for a fresh start, House Buyer Network can help. We buy homes as is for cash. No fees, no commissions, no repairs. Get a fair cash offer in just 24 hours and close in as little as 7 days. Call 833-719-5877 now for your free no-obligation offer. That's 833-719-5877. House Buyer Network. Fast cash, no hassle.
Offers are typically below market value in exchange for speed and convenience. Call for details.
Doug. Limu and I created a trick to help you remember that you can customize your car insurance and save with Liberty Mutual. You see, the shirts Limu and I wear are yellow, and yellow is the color of lemons. And lemons grow on trees, and trees provide oxygen, and oxygen helps us breathe, and breathing is how you live, and you can live more life when you save money by customizing your car insurance. I agree, Limu. It's really quite simple. Only pay for what you need at LibertyMutual.com.
Intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or condition.
You're listening to Westwood One Sports on WFAN-FM HD2 New York, an Odyssey sports station. Always live.